Well, my name is Frederick Janay. I'm from Caltech, and I'm here to talk about simulations of three-dimensional electromagnetic Descartes turbulence. As was said before, Andrew Milan was supposed to be giving this talk from the University of Berkeley, but he was called off for various reasons, so I'm now giving this talk, which gives me the right to cross out his name and put mine on the top. So also I should announce that, or say that we're also doing this work in collaboration with Peter Robinson at the University of Sydney. So, first thing I'm going to talk about is electrostatic car physics, nonlinear wave collapse. This is basically just a review of what's sort of been done. Second thing, just discuss where this stuff is applicable. Most readily it's applicable in beam plasma experiments and atmospheric heating experiments. There's also a possibility for it being available in various space environments and whatnot. We're still sort of thinking about where the applications are. Of particular importance to me is pulsar emission mechanisms, and I'll get into that a little bit later. Third thing that I'm going to get into then is our particular work, which is the inclusion of electromagnetic modes at the plasma frequency, and then basically discuss current results. Okay, so the first thing, let me just describe Descartes turbulence. It sometimes goes under the name of strong plasma turbulence. The form of strong plasma turbulence, it's essentially a state. State of a plasma. So you had a hot ionized gas sitting there, and you somehow pumped energy into this gas. So either some sort of instability, a beam plasma instability, or shined an electric field on it. Somehow you're getting energy into this plasma. In the beginning stages, it's basically going to behave in sort of your weak level, your familiar weak turbulence level, where you just have basically a coupling between various different motors and whatnot, and so forth. But eventually, the fields are going to get strong enough, they're going to reach a threshold value, such that nonlinear effects are going to start to be apparent. And one of the first things that starts to set in is you'll have a region, a localized region of a strong electric field. Then, because of this localized region, if it's strong enough again, you start to basically push away the plasma density in that region. So you start to decrease the plasma density because of this localized electric field. I'll get into that, how that works a little bit later. So essentially, when you do that, you start to form these coherent wave packets, and that's basically what you're seeing here. This is a three-dimensional plot of basically contours of electric field strength, and a particular electric field strength. So you can see that when it's within the background, which is a low-level incoherent turbulence, you're having these coherent structures form spontaneously within this thing. Now, this is essentially what characterizes strong plasma turbulence. So you went from the weak case where you have sort of a homogeneous system going on, and all of a sudden this thing starts to break up, and you start to get these coherent wave packets in there.
Are you in collisionless regime?
This is in the collisionless regime, yes. Mm-hmm. Again, there's a particular threshold for when this stuff starts to work. Essentially, what it is when the nonlinear terms become dominant or close to the dispersion, the linear dispersive terms, and this is just an expression of that, saying that the energy density has to be greater than a particular threshold. So, let's see. Looking at an individual wave packet.
There's no background magnetic field.
In this particular problem, there's no background magnetic field. It's a collisionless, no external fields whatsoever that are applied. The only external stuff is some sort of driving mechanism. There is electrostatic turbulence that is done in the case when there is a magnetic field. Essentially, what that does, see these wave packets look fairly spherical. Right? The ratios are 2 to 2 to 1. If you put a magnetic field in there, you start to get elongated wave packets. You go along the magnetic field where you get wave packets. For a different mode, the lower hybrid mode, you get these packets that are elongated along the transverse axis. Just to keep things simple right now, we're not putting in a magnetic field. Okay, so this is sort of a cross section of a wave packet. This is one of these things that sort of forms spontaneously. What forms initially is sort of what's represented by the dotted curve. So essentially, you have a region where you have a localized increase in the electric field strength. This starts to change the density. So as you have this localized field, it's a particular strength above the threshold, And it starts to make a density well by pushing both species in charge away from the region of localized field strength. When that happens, you're essentially changing the index of refraction in this area, and you start to get self-focusing. So more energy then is focused into this particular region of change of decreased density. When you do that, the field strength increases. Field strength increases, of course, it starts to dig a deeper well, you get more stuff in. So you get this runaway collapse event, such that the field starts to increase strongly, and the density well starts to increase, and this thing, the whole length scale of this thing starts to collapse. If there were no damping whatsoever in the plasma, this thing would basically collapse to a singularity. There is damping, of course, this Landau damping is sort of nominally. And that would arrest the collapse when this thing sort of, when the density well has a scale size of a divide length. There's something called transit time damping, which essentially starts to arrest the collapse at around 20 lambda divide. But that's the basics of the sort of electrostatic Sakara turbulence. Okay, just want to throw up a slide on beam plasma experiments. So this stuff has actually been observed experimentally, so it's not just something that's, you know, people have invented this, there's nothing to back it up. There are actually experiments that have seen these collapse events. Essentially, you have a plasma-filled tube, you shoot an electron beam through it, that's your driver. This starts to generate Langmuir waves or electrostatic waves. There are various ways of measuring what's going on, experimental ways of measuring what's going on. There's the important stuff. Is essentially that basically people have measured the electric field strength and the density, and these are various plots taken from Chang Wang, where you see that you have regions of strong electric field correlated with regions of decreased density. And there are various other experimental verifications of this particular process.
Are there any requirements driving this turbulence or any electric field?
As I understand it, it's just you just require something. As far as I understand, there's no. It's just some way to pump energy into the system.
Using these beam cases, right? It starts with a beam plasma stability. This is the nominal consequences of those beam plasma stability. It's not sort of a generalized turbulence, but these spiky structures throughout it.
So you shoot a beam, and then you on the along the path of the beam, you see these funny empty structures.
The spiky structure. Yeah. I think the first.
Well,
the first experimental evidence that this was really quite extraordinary was sort of almost like relative scattering. The beam was quite weak in the plasma, and yet it produced these little coherent structures. So you'd see 90-degree scatters of the beam of the plasma turbulence. This was the first observation from the Dutch group.
So the one particular astrophysical application. Is a possible, and this is of course very speculative, is a possible source of pulsar radio emission. Essentially there's this concept, I don't know if anyone's familiar with the jargon in pulsar radio emission, but there's this concept of a primary emitter. Primary emitter is sort of a general name for a coherent structure in the magnetospheric plasma of a pulsar. So it's some coherent structure, simply because we don't really understand the physics that's going on up there, it's some coherent structure that's emitting coherent radiation. And then in the magnetosphere, you have a whole bunch of these coherent structures that are emitting. Then the radiation at the telescope is a sum. The radiation field that's received is a sum of all of these coherent emission events, giving you in the end basically an incoherent noise signal. Now it's possible one can relate these coherent events, these spontaneously created coherent events, to the primary emitters. Then the simulation statistics, when you have detailed enough experiments, detailed enough simulations, and a detailed enough understanding of this sort of process in conditions that are basically the pulsar magnetospheric conditions, one can then compare this with detailed observations. I'll just say that my main line of work is doing these detailed observations, and actually we're at the point now where we are actually putting very good constraints on the existence of and possibly the detection of these primary emission events. So. I will move on to the equations that we're looking at. Okay, so now of course what we're doing is, well, in electrostatic case isn't all that interesting for people that are interested in looking at emission. So now what we do is you add on the electromagnetic terms. So the basically what we have here, this is just the this is an equation you get out of Maxwell's equations once you've taken out the fast oscillations of the plasma frequency. So it's sort of a, so basically you're looking at a slow field oscillation. That's a slow field envelope of something that is oscillating at the plasma frequency. Then you have a series of perhaps familiar terms. This one is basically what governs the transverse rate, the transverse terms. The next one, the second term there is your, is the longitudinal waves. Then you have the basically this is your nonlinear reflection terms. This is basically how the plasma frequency changes when you change the density. And then we have a continuous driver stick. And then of course we have a continuous driver which is added in to pump energy into the system.
For the pulsar, what's the slow time scale? I mean, in normal angular turbulence, the slow time scale is the sound wave.
Right.
Right. In the pulsar, it's an electron positron plasma.
It's an electron positron plasma. The idea there is your. I mean, it's a good question. What you're saying is, I don't know what exactly the time scale, the slow time scale stuff is. And it's essentially, it's a. I mean, it could just be a sound equation that was just basically determining how the change a neutral density. If you do a neutral density perturbation, right? There is a diffusion equation which describes how that particular that perturbation is going to propagate in that medium. So it's basically, it turns out to be a diffusion-like equation. So this the slow time scale stuff here gets replaced with something that's a diffusion equation in the at least that's my guess right now. But that is a good question as to what the slow time scale stuff would be in the possible. But anyway, in this case, we are dealing with, which is basically a sound equation, the ion sound equation, for the slow time scale neutral plasma background. So that's basically just a wave equation. And this is your ponder motor force term, which is basically acting, when you have a strong electric field, it's acting as a pressure to push your both electrons and ions away from that particular region of strong electric field. Okay, so again, what we've basically done is we've added we've added the transverse terms. Basically, we're considering only those modes at the plasma frequency right now. Of course, the two omega p guys are important, but it turns out, and it has been experimentally verified, the two omega p stuff is much less than the omega p stuff. So we're sort of ignoring that right now. Also, let's see, anything else that's... Okay. I mean, at the moment we're only driving and damping the Langmuir waves. The transverse waves are sort of damped. I mean, they are damped, but they're damped through conversion processes within the plasma. And the other thing is that basically the work is done using a parallel entropy spectral filter. So let's see. Okay. So. Throw on our pretty picture right away. Okay. So what we've been looking at is basically the different steady state plasma states at various different values of V thermal on C. So various different temperatures of the background plasma. This particular one we've done with a V thermal C of 0.57. Which is a little bit out of the range of the equation, of the validity of those particular equations. But there are various practical issues and whatnot that are why we actually look at this, as well as the fact that the equations aren't too far off from what you would expect for the relativistic case. So anyway, in this particular case, both the longitudinal and the transverse are playing equal roles, simply because their length scales are roughly at the same order. As you can see, the yellow contours here are contours of longitudinal field strength, and longitudinal energy density, and the red contours of the transverse energy density. And this is a blue scale plot of the electron density or the plasma density. White is a high, basically white is high plasma density, and the black is a low plasma density. So the black stuff is basically the black stuff are the wells that are formed, and basically you can see that there are these high intensity fields, and there's wells underneath those high intensity. So these are the coherent structures that basically form spontaneously in the system. Some other interesting stuff that's happening is basically you're getting these rings as they collapse. If you were to see a movie of this thing, what you would see is you see one of these collapses occur. As it collapses, these rings would then shoot out from the region of the wave packet. I'll talk a little bit more about those rings. Let's see.
Sorry, this is 2D?
This is 2D, yeah.
Is this what?
Just electrons and positrons, or do you
No, this is electrons and ions. It's electrons. Let's see. So now we decrease the temperature of the plasma. This was using basically V-thermal on C 0.01. In this case, you basically now have your localized longitudinal wave packets. Of course, you have your various your density wells that are all over the place. And then, but in this case now, you have the transverse waves now delocalized, because they're essentially traveling waves that are essentially moving all throughout the box. They're no longer localized with a particular well. Okay. Let's see. Okay, so another interesting thing that we're seeing is something we call boom-bust cycles. So, what are we going to look at? What are we looking at here? This is essentially a log linear plot of the energy density of the average energy density of the longitudinal and the transverse waves. So, right in the beginning, time t equals zero, you can see you're having a buildup of the longitudinal and buildup, and followed by a buildup of the transverse as you're pumping energy into the system. You essentially have your initial collapse. So, one very big wave packet forms. That thing then collapses. Then eventually, much later on in time, you reach a steady state, both in the longitudinal and the transverse. And in this steady state, we're essentially basically seeing what looks like some quasi-periodicities moving into some sort of quiet time and starting to get these quasi-periodicities again. There's a lag between the transverse and the longitudinal. You're going to autocorrelate these. If you cross-correlate these things, you'll see that there's a lag on the order of the ponder-motive time scale. So it's on the order of a collapse time of one of these wave packets, which is sort of which one would expect if we consider that it's the longitudinal that's sort of being created first and the transverse follows.
Your pump is spectrally narrow. How spectrally narrow is your pumping?
It's very narrow. It's a delta function. It's a delta function.
That sometimes causes oscillations when you have a spectrally narrow pumping. Then it's like you have two subsystems. One is related to the pumping and another everything else. And it's a very standard thing in turbulence. You'll see oscillations like this, especially in this kind of system.
Okay. So what is the, it's between, if you have a very narrow,
spectrally narrow pumping, then usually you have a steady state, which is accompanied by oscillations, which is periodical conversions between two parts of the turbulence, one in a very narrow spectral interval and another the rest.
Okay. So I can look into that and see if that's it's of order of time scale that doesn't seem to relate to anything that we were able to find out, which is basically 20 times the collapse time. So it had nothing to do with the driver, the driving rate.
You might try to check spectral width of your pumping and see if this will.
That sounds like a good idea. Okay, now let's see what else do we have here. Okay, the other thing that we're interested in, obviously, is to try to understand what the conversion rate, what the efficiency is to get into transverse energy. So this is basically a plot of transverse energy density divided by the longitudinal energy density. It's a log-log plot as a function of V thermal and C. Essentially, what we're finding is below V thermal and C was 0.1. You get that this efficiency ratio of scaling is V thermal and C is 2.4. At the moment, we don't really know analytically why this particular number is coming up. We tried various approaches and nothing seems to give us that number yet. So anyway, but this is definitely one of the things that we're interested in finding out what that is, especially when you want to figure out if this is an efficient mechanism at all for pulsar radiation or any kind of radiation.
So you're producing these concentrations or these blobs, and then you ask the question whether they will radiate.
They convert into transverse radiation. Right now, as I said, we're sort of interested, we're looking at the transverse radiation at omega peak, near omega peak. So there are, of course, problems in terms of how does the omega peak come out of how does that radiation get out of the plasma in the end. We're just looking at that right now because that's the dominant component. I'm trying to understand that first and then move on to the ones like the 2 omega peak radiation and that sort of stuff. That's sort of the philosophy at the moment. So one interesting thing is to try to figure out what the structure of these individual wave packets are that form spontaneously in the turbulence. So what you can do is you can grab one of them and you can do a multiple decomposition of those structures to see exactly what's going on there. And when you do that, this is just a plot for the longitudinal component. It happens to be for V-thermal LT 0.57, but there are similar plots for all V-thermal LTs that we've looked at. And essentially what this plot is saying, this is essentially a particular multiple decomposition. These two are the dipoles, the dipole decomposition, they equal plus and minus one. The rest that are on here, basically the monopole component and the plus and minus two are all down here. Of course, the higher order ones are all down here. So what this is saying is that the wave packets that form spontaneously are, to a very, very good degree, dipolar. Both the longitudinal and the transverse come out to be dipolar. The other interesting thing is that the orientation of these dipoles tends to be, they're cross dipoles, so the longitudinal will have one orientation, the transverse will be perpendicular to that orientation. And now this is now looking at a single collapsing packet, looking at energy versus time during a collapse. Again, this is for 0.57, V on C equal to 0.57. Again, we see similar things for different regimes. What essentially is happening, this is now the central electric field squared, so the central energy density as one of these collapsing packets collapses. Transit time damping is in there. It's in there in that growth rate that we saw that was put in there. So it's stitched in. So essentially this is the total energy density. And then if you look at the individual longitudinal transverse components, what's essentially happening is that you're having these oscillations between the longitudinal and the transverse as this thing is collapsing. So we start out, as you can see, basically longitudinal and the transverse together oscillate, but the total, of course, is a smooth curve. Another interesting thing that we looked at is just looking at the transverse power that's sort of escaping this particular region. So if you have your wave packet centered in this box, and you basically put a little surface around this box, and look at the pointing flux that's moving through this box, and you look at this as a function of time. This is specifically for the 0.57 case right now. Essentially, finding this is a function of time. This is where burnout is occurring. So this is basically the packet is growing, and then all of a sudden the transit time damping arrests the collapse. And then a little bit later, all of a sudden you now have this large flux of radiation that's passing through this surface. But it's crossing at the ion sound crossing time, not necessarily not the speed of light or it's basically not what you would expect the transverse rate to be traveling at. That's getting back to those rings that you saw.
On the first graph, is it possible to see any scaling as a function of time minus collapse time?
Say that again?
Could you resolve, let's say on the first, any power law in the dependence of energy on time? As you approach singularity.
So this, yes, that does actually fit a power law. If you were to plot this on a log plot, that would give you that nice power law that's the 1 over 1 plus t to the something. Yeah, that does fit that actually. Okay. Let's see. So just to remind you of the in sort of the hot temperature case, you have these rings that were coming out of the individual packets. This is now looking at an individual packet, cross-section of an individual packet. You have total energy density. This is the transverse energy density, this is the longitudinal energy density, and this is a function of time. As this packet is collapsing, eventually it does form these, eventually it forms this ring around it, so the well is relaxing, it overshoots, and these rings start forming. These rings will then eventually propagate out. Well, it turned out these rings are actually carrying electrostatic and electromagnetic radiation with them. So essentially what it did is it formed a soliton, and this soliton is now traveling outwards. And that's basically the reason why the transverse energy density that we saw in the other plot was traveling at a speed of the sound wave rather than the electromagnetic mode phase speed. So let's see. That is basically it for the time being. So essentially, I'll just review. Basically, we have been working on simulations of electromagnetic to car turbulence. Essentially, what we have done is put in the transverse modes. I'll just say that one of the reasons why this is extremely difficult to do is the disparate scales between the transverse modes and the longitudinal modes. So it does require actually an enormous amount of computational power just to get as far as we did. It's one of the reasons why we're also not doing three dimensions. Then the wide range of new thermal NCs is also something that is not usually done.
So it's a V over C of 0.5, isn't it?
What's that?
At V over C of 0.5, then scales aren't too different.
At V over C, they're not too different. And these runs, of course, don't take that long. It's one of the reasons why we like to do those particular runs first, to make sure everything's working. And then, of course, we slowly move this down to something more reasonable. Let's see. And, of course, we continuously drive it to get into this statistical state. Let's see. What else did I discuss here? Of course, the long-period boom-bust cycles, which you had an interesting possibility of what that could be. And there is this ratio of transverse to longitudinal, which looks like it scales as new thermal NCs at 2.4, and we don't necessarily have an analytic solution for that. So, and of course, the radiation pattern, the spontaneously created energy density and energy densities, or the spontaneously created fields, seem to form dipoles out of this in this plasma. So.
What's that? What about wave number spectra?
Wave number spectra. Okay, I do have those. somewhere in here. I glossed over them. Let's see.
Do you see any field?
These are the spectra. This is the spectra that we're seeing for the transverse radiation. Essentially, this is basically the inertial range area. When I say the inertial range area, it's sort of the K that you would expect that it corresponds to the length scales of the packets. And of course, the indices those seem to be governing from for the transverse scales. Is this just the density intersection? I'm not sure how to interpret that at the moment. But
in the end, you want these things to radiate, right?
Yes.
The transverse energy. And when you're looking at the ratio of transverse energy to longitudinal energy, a lot of that is just trapped.
A lot of it is trapped.
And when the thing goes away, the transverse energy goes away as well.
It depends. Not necessarily, because at least in these simulations right now, the damping is only affecting the longitudinal waves. So when these things do collapse down, the longitudinal is damped out tremendously there. Then the transverse is sort of just remaining. It's just sort of hanging around, becoming evanescent, and doing basically converted into perhaps other linear waves or other ions. But there is a little bit of that which is going to be slightly above the plasma frequency because of the small scales of the radiation right. And the fact that the well has changed the frequency of the heat. So that stuff does go out and starts to probably get down. So there is a, so the idea of, yeah, figuring out exactly how much of that stuff gets out is one of the things we're trying to do.
In the low, in the VOC at 0.01 or something, it looked like there were no rings forming because the transverse was not localized. And does this
that's an excellent question. We're still trying to figure out exactly why. Yeah, I mean, we're not sure exactly why when you do decrease the VOC and then you have two disparate, very disparate scales, why this doesn't.
So you don't see this phenomenon of the energy density crossing the boundary and a sound crossing time in that case? I mean, no. That's only in the high.
It's only in the high beam modes. Basically, when both modes are behaving. Well, there's an interesting thing. When both modes are behaving the same, when both modes are behaving the same, essentially the wave packet structure looks, the density level looks slightly different. For the case of when they're both basically the same, V-thermal and C is close to 0.57, you essentially have that the density wells are circular. I believe this is just basically due to the fact that what's supporting them is this structure, which is this cross-dipole structure. Together, the thing looks monopolar. And then you essentially have a circular well. When you go to the lower V-thermal and C's, the well becomes more elongated, looking more like a dipolar-type structure. That might be related to why rings form in one and not the other, but again, I'm not sure.
Can you clarify? I mean, when you increase the value of C, then...
You increase the value of C, okay.
It becomes more circular. When you decrease C, it becomes more elongated, right?
When you increase the value of V thermal on C.
Okay.
When you
increase... My question relates more on... in the equation, you have C multiplied by a double curl, right?
Yes.
Okay. If you take this term to zero,
you let the term go to zero.
Then in the equation, the diffraction term is just like the grad g.
Mm-hmm. So you just have one two modes. You just have the
And in that case, it seems. I mean, my experience is that in that case, you form very elongated structures and
yes.
Almost no collapse. I mean, you have a collapse of the gradient, but not of the amplitude. So do you confirm that?
The collapse of the
You form elongated structures, and the amplitude doesn't grow too much, but the gradient of the field kind of.
Okay. Maybe we should modify what you mean by not too much. Maybe factor two or three. Is that what you consider not?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's basically what we see that the energy density only changed by two or three.
So it does become
steeper. Yeah.
Okay. So as you decrease C, then you have a more elongated dipolar structure.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the other case is when you increase the contribution of the transverse modes, you start to get a more circular, circular structure. Yeah. Okay. That's what we're seeing.
So are these power cross gate rings, do they pass through each other without interacting?
Do they pass? They definitely pass in the simulations. They pass through each other. I haven't looked at what happens when they collide. Where is mess? I lost. That's an interesting question. I don't know what happens when they do collide.
Well, it looks from the images that there are many sort of overlapping.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We can definitely find out. It's just a question of finding the data. Probably can't tell anything here, but I mean there are definitely cases that we have. These things do go off together.
The equation is linear, right? For the sound waves. Have you tried?
The equation is linear for the sound waves. Well,
Have you tried to put nonlinear terms?
No, we haven't put any.
Because here, I think the amplitude of the density equation is quite high. Right?
I have to check this exactly because they're in these normalized units, so it's hard to say what exactly is happening. But yeah, there are no nonlinear terms in this.
Okay, so these are actually described by a linear equation.
Well, not completely. It's described by a coupled system. And the coupled system has the electric fields in it together with these density prohibitions. And both of those have a nonlinear terms in them. So the electric field, I mean, the electric field term is essentially, well, okay, this is the nonlinearity here. So the density, so there is this essentially this electric field square term in here. So together it's a nonlinear system. If you just look at one individually, it would be a linear system. Now you might say, okay, this looks like I just dropped something in, like, you know, a water wave or something. I just made a density perturbation and this relaxes and this is what you get. The thing is, that should be independent of the thermal on C. In that case, because it's still there, you know, as I get rid of this term, contribution of this term, essentially this, you know, this effect should still be there. As the well collapses, I should see this stuff coming up, but we don't see that for the low. Or for the cases where you just didn't even include this at all, like in the case of the electrostatic cases, you don't see these rings forming. So it definitely has something to do with the presence of the transverse radiation, whether it's the initial conditions, because of the circular, makes the circular well to begin with, as opposed to this elongated, and maybe the elongated thing doesn't, that's something we can actually get, sort of thinking about checking, just checking that, looking at the linear evolution of the elongated thing, see if you see rings, that sort of thing. So, and because there is some amount of energy density in those rings that is propagating outwards, this is the total energy density that's in there. So it is a solid metal structure that's coming up. It's made up of both electric fields and a well. So.
What's the breakup
like
the
original beam? See,
suddenly
then
the excitement
mm-hmm.
and then the instability undergoes evolution. So does
beam
just attenuate and
dampen
the original instability, or does it survive longer?
In our cases, we don't have any feedback to the beam whatsoever. So essentially, the beam is not even going to be broken up or any of this sort of stuff. There are effects of the beam that are just not, at the moment, just not considered. Any of that feedback to the electron, just any heating, or any electron heating is not going to, is not considered in this model. So.
Have you tried to look at the ratio between the dissipation that occurs in the collapse to the original wave dissipation that you could see from the satellite, for instance?
Look
at in the spirit of what Newell and Tachenko and Makarov did in just non-Schlinger equation.
We're trying to get that similar thing started. We're basically looking at what the damping is in the packets compared to what's going on in the other. We're in the process of doing that sort of stuff. But we don't have any results on that yet. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an interesting question. But anyway, so that's basically it. So.